We'll be right back. We're going to have the amazing Deacon Harold Burke-Sivers with us. I can't wait. It'll be so great to actually interview him in person. Of course, we've known each other for many years, and he's a deacon. My husband's a deacon, and I'm very supportive of the overall diaconate community, and we'll be talking about that and much more as we continue our discussion. Hopefully, the Captain Steve won't be joining us, but we'll see what happens. If we need to go to a previously recorded program, we will. If not, we'll stay live here for you from the beautiful oasis of the seas. Deacon Harold Burke-Sivers up next.
When the need for senior care arises, home is where the heart is. Visiting Angels provides home care for mom or dad up to 24 hours per day, including personal care, meals, and light housework. You may select your professional caregiver with Visiting Angels. More information at visitingangels.com or at 877-374-LIVE. That's 877-374-LIVE. Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care.
We are the pro-life generation, passionate about building the culture of life in our healthcare and in our nation. But not all healthcare options are equally pro-life, and some provide morally objectionable procedures. CMF Curo is different. CMF Curo is a pro-life Catholic healthcare ministry providing a pathway for its members to build the culture of life in their healthcare choices, not destroy it. Learn more about CMF Curo at MyCatholicHealthcare.com. That's MyCatholicHealthcare.com.
Welcome back. We are live from the beautiful oasis of the seas, and it's so great to see my dear friend, Deacon Harold Burke-Sivers. And Deacon, you're such a dynamic speaker. I mean that from the bottom of my heart. And I was teasing earlier when I said you need to come out of your shell and be a little bit more enthusiastic. But thank you for being so powerful in your words about the Lord.
Well, thank you, Teresa. It's great to be with you again and in person this time.
Yay! We're here!
Doesn't happen that often.
I know.
So this is wonderful. Thank you.
So I know you've done a cruise before. You did one for the Diocese of Orlando, you were saying. But this is a little bit different because this is specifically for marriage. What are your impressions so far?
Yeah, this is wonderful. I mean, I really would encourage all the married couples out there to take advantage of this opportunity to come on a cruise next year or the year after, whenever. It's just a wonderful way, I think, for couples to renew and just spend some time together, renew
right.
that the love and the together from all the distractions, just focus on them, you know, and their marriage for a week. And it's a wonderful balance, I think, between the faith. So you have mass and confession and wonderful talks, but then you can also have plenty of time for play and recreation and have fun.
Right.
It's just a wonderful balance. I think it's very healthy, especially for marriages today.
And yesterday we had the beautiful opportunity to just sit back and just to be informed and encouraged and educated through the amazing Kimberly and Scott Hahn. Both gave powerful presentations. We had an off-boat experience where we got on the buses in Cozumel. It took us to this beautiful, beautiful resort. We had a beautiful lunch, and then Scott gave a talk, and then Kimberly gave a talk, and they spent a lot of time with the folks here. That was really powerful yesterday, I thought.
Yeah, it was great. And I love the fact that, and Dr. Hahn was absolutely correct, there was a wonderful balance there between Scott giving the head and then Kimberly giving the heart.
Right.
You know, and it was a lot of people were talking about it yesterday.
So what else are you hearing from the couples this week so far, Deacon, in terms of their response to this experience?
Yeah, well, a lot of couples are having a wonderful experience, the ones that have come up to me and I've been talking to as well. A lot of them said that we needed this, you know, especially come out of COVID and all the anxiety and the stress around that. So this is exactly what the doctor ordered, if you will.
Yeah. Let's talk, shift gears a little bit and talk about your book, Our Life of Service, because I received a copy of it. And, of course, my husband confiscated it fairly quickly and said, ooh, I want to see this. And he's been reading the book, and he loves it. This was specifically for the deacon, this book that you wrote.
Well, it's not, yeah, so
It's a handbook for Catholic deacons.
Yeah, handbook for Catholic deacons.
And, right.
But this is also for, I think, the person in the pew who wants to understand the diaconate better.
Oh, okay.
Because sometimes you'll hear things like, oh, yeah, you're just like a priest if you can't say Mass, right, or hear confessions, or, oh, yeah, if you weren't married, you'd probably be a, I mean, that kind of thing, like if the diaconate was, like, second place or, you know, but it's a separate vocation from the priesthood, but also essential. I think it was St. Irenaeus that said, unless you have the priesthood, the episcopacy and the diaconate, you can't say you have the church. You know, so I want to really have people understand what the diaconate is as far as its focus on the service ministry. So, for example, the first part of the book talks about the kind of the understanding of diaconal spirituality in regard to service. So, for example, you have a deacon serving in St. Vincent de Paul and a layperson serving in St. Vincent de Paul in your parish. What's the difference? They're both doing the same thing, right? But why is that different? What difference does a deacon being there make? You know, so that I really want to explore that understanding of diaconal spirituality with regard to service.
So how would you respond? That's a great question, though. How would you respond to that in terms of what difference would the deacon make in that sort of a situation?
Yeah, so the deacon is the icon of Christ's service ministry. So we're permanent, public, ordained signs and witnesses of the bishop's ministry of service to the entire church. So, and that's exemplified, for example, in our roles at Mass. Even when the Pope says Mass, a deacon reads the gospel. So if Pope Francis were to come on the boat, you know, one of the deacons that are here would read the gospel.
Right.
Because we're ministers of evangelization. And so we're public signs and icons of that service ministry of Christ. So our job is not to compete with lay people, but to empower. Actually, that's what Paul VI actually said, to empower and lift up lay people so they can actually live that baptismal call to holiness.
That's beautiful. We're talking with Deacon Harold Berg-Sivers. We're live on the Oasis of the Seas. It's a Thursday morning, about 20 minutes past the hour, and it's such a great honor for me to actually be able to interview you in person. We've known each other for years, and it's just so great to be together. We've got a wonderful studio audience with us. It got up bright and early to see the show. And thanks be to God, so far so good. Technology-wise, things are holding out. Let's keep praying for the intercession of all our great media saints. In terms of the diaconate, it's growing, and I think the church in the United States is being recognized for really leading the charge with the diaconate. And we saw each other in Rome when they had the big Congress a few years ago, and we had the most deacons present, right?
Yeah, there are more permanent deacons in the United States than anywhere else in the world by far. You know, so I think definitely the United States is leading the way. And I think the part of that is that other people don't really understand the diaconate. They see it as in competition with the priesthood.
Right.
You know, oh, we have enough priests, we don't need deacons. Like, whoa, hold on. That means you don't understand the diaconate. It has nothing to do with competing with priests.
Right.
You know, if there's a so-called priest shortage, the way to solve that is encourage more young men to be priests, not ordaining deacons. That's not how you solve that issue, because we have a different ministry in a different way of exercising ministry than the priest does. And, you know, what I wanted to do in the book was call us the sheepdogs. You know, the priest, the shepherd, and we're the sheepdogs, but the editors didn't like that. They thought, Oh, God, I'll be offended if you call. But think about it, the shepherd can't do his job without the sheepdog.
Right.
What does the sheepdog do? He goes and gathers the sheep and brings them to the shepherd. And that's what the deacon does.
That's a great analogy.
He proclaims the gospel. Then he's out in the trenches with the people proclaiming the gospel. When they're ready, he brings them to the healing ministry of the priest.
Right. So what led you to discern the diaconate? Because you were very young when you were ordained.
Yes. Well, I was a monk, a Benedictine in my 20s. And when I left Monastic life,
Dominic and I were talking about this the other day. You're so outgoing and you're such an extrovert like me. I can't imagine you as a monk.
No, I'm actually an introvert.
You are?
Oh, yeah.
No way.
Oh, absolutely.
No
100%,
way.
100%. You know, absolutely.
I'm stunned.
I know. People think that the way I speak is like, that's who you are. But even the bishop last night at dinner was saying, you know, you're pretty subdued. I thought you would have been. And people forget. In fact, Janet Begovic asked me on her show once. She goes, when do you feel mostly like yourself? I said, I feel like the person that God created me to be when I'm in adoration.
Wow.
That's where I
beautiful.
Really feel like myself, fully like myself.
Wow.
Yeah. And so when I left monastic life, I still felt a pull, a tug, and I was like, what is this? And ultimately discerned that to be the call to the diaconate. So I was accepted into the program at 30. There was no class that year, so I had to wait till the next year. I was 31, 5 years in our archdiocese, and I was ordained at 36.
Yeah, because I know that, isn't it standard now, 35 is
the... Well, canon law is 35, is the minimum age at ordination. So you don't have to be 35 to start the program,
right.
You have to be 35 at ordination.
To be ordained. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, obviously it worked well for you, but I know that there can be challenges, and so normally what they do when you go through, when you're applying for the whole process, is that they look at your situation. And I know that with you, you had to meet with the bishop, right? Because you had young children at the time.
Yes. Yeah. In fact, we had no children when I started. And then we had, so by the time I was getting ready to be ordained, we had a 4-year-old, a 2-year-old, and my wife was pregnant with twins.
Wow.
And part of what they do is they do a home visit. So they came to the house, and they were like, oh, they looked around and said, how is this going to happen? So we raised some red flags, and so we had a meeting with the bishop. So the bishop looked at everything, and he met with Colleen and I, and he said, look, he goes, you know, we've never ordained anybody as young as you. We've never ordained anybody with kids as young as yours, but we think you guys could be a great witness to the power of family life.
Right.
He goes, I looked at everything. He goes, you're ready. He goes, so I'm going to ordain you, but I'm going to tell you where you're going to be assigned and go to work it out with the priest, you know. So mm-hmm. we're kind of like the guinea pigs. So what he does, so what the new archbishop does now is that it's a case-by-case basis. If you're under 40 and you have small kids, it's not automatic, but it's a case-by-case basis.
Right.
I think we were the ones, because it worked so well for us, that that now they're more open to that now.
But I think it's important that they did sit down with you and review, because there are some families who may not be able to handle it for a variety of reasons. And some may be better equipped emotionally or spiritually, because there's a lot of juggling. You have the formation, you have the education, you have your internships. There's a whole lot that goes on. And then you have everything on top of that to raise a family. But obviously, the bishop was discerning correctly, and so did you, because you're an amazing deacon. More with Deacon Harold Burke-Sivers, and we come back. And then Dr. Ray managed to pull himself away from the buffet, and he is in the house, and he'll join us at about 39 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back. Welcome back. 28 minutes past the hour. We are live on the Oasis of the Seas. It's our Good News Cruise, the second one we're doing. We've got another one coming up next year. We've got great guests next year as well, Chris Stefanik from EW10 and many other folks. And Deacon Harold Burke-Sivers, one of our guest speakers this year. So many people from EW10 represented in Ave Maria Radio. Dr. Grundy, I think is his name. He's coming up next. He managed to pull himself away from the buffet, so I'm very proud of him. And he'll be joining us, and we'll take some studio audience questions as well. Having a great conversation with Deacon Harold Burke-Sivers, who's a deacon in the Diocese of Portland, Oregon, but also, of course, we know him so well from his books and his missions, parish missions, and his great work at EW10. A latest book of his, Our Life of Service, a Handbook for Catholic Deacons. Now, you're also working on another one, and you certainly don't shy away from, I would say, hot topics, right? Tell us about the upcoming book from Ignatius.
So, in fact, I just had a conversation just yesterday with Mark Brumley about the book. It's called Building a Civilization of Love, A Catholic Response to Racism.
Ooh, wow.
So basically, I'm going to be looking at racism versus prejudice, because right now, if you say anything, you're racist, and it's not. It's just not.
Mm-hmm.
So I distinguish between racism and prejudice, between institutional racism and people in institutions who are racist. Two completely different things. I look at the church and slavery, so I have to go back biblically to understand what that is, and then how that manifests itself in the life of the church, and the fact that there were bishops and priests and religious orders that owned slaves. I don't shy away from
right.
that.
Mm-hmm.
But even to show how in the church and its magisterial teaching from the popes have really been truly outspoken against the institution of slavery. And then I talk about, and I hope the book doesn't get sidetracked because of these three issues, but I have to talk about them because people are trying to take these things and incorporate them into the church. Critical race theory, liberation theology, and the Black Lives Matter movement.
Ugh.
You know, so I spend one chapter on each of those things, but this is why I wanted to talk with Mark yesterday. I hope people, when the book comes out, people don't say it's a book about critical race theory. It's not. It's a book about how we can truly, I think we can take the lead as a Catholic Church to really be the ones to help this culture overcome the sin of racial division. But I have to show why those three things don't work.
Right.
And what I did was I bought the books of the people who developed these theories. I didn't want to say, well, this person said this about critical race theory. So I bought Jeanine Stefanik and Richard Delgado and Derek Bell's books, and I read them and with the thinking, okay, is there something here that we can take as Catholics and say, okay, well, let's bring that into and the answer is absolutely no. For critical race theory, Black Lives Matter movement, again, nothing wrong with the words, but the movement problem and liberation theology. And then the last part of the book is I lay out a step-by-step plan on how Catholics can actually work to overcome the sin of racism.
Well, where do you see critical race theory and also liberation theology and then Black Lives Matter, where do you see this moving into the church? What's concerning
well,
you right now with that?
Well, people are bringing them into schools, into parishes. Okay. I mean, I've been places where they say, oh, they're trying to bring in this speaker and this book, or I'm like, ooh, what? Whoa, hold on.
Do they really know the people
or
they think they're doing something that's going to help address this issue?
They think they're doing something good that's going to help, and I guarantee you, the people who are doing this do not understand what critical race theory is. Because if they did, and that's why I have to talk about it in the book, because people are trying to bring this into the church. It doesn't belong. In fact, the people who develop critical race theory says it doesn't belong in a Christian context.
Wow.
So that's why I wanted to read what they said, because if they're going to criticize me, don't criticize me. Show me where I'm wrong. Because I'm just saying, you know, repeating what they say about these different ways of thinking.
So you're probably already getting, I could imagine, some pushback on this. Not from, obviously, it's a great publisher. We have a mutual publisher at Ignatius Press. They do wonderful work. But I'm talking about people who think that these are good things.
Yes, and I already know I'm going to be criticized, but so what?
So what? The
you
truth
know?
Has to get out
they,
there.
They spat and beat Jesus half to death, and then they hung him on a cross. And Jesus says, pick up your cross and follow me. So
yeah.
I have no issue with being criticized. But, I mean, and I know I'm going to personally be attacked, but what they should be looking at is my argument and show me where I'm wrong.
Well, the ad hominem attacks are the first place people go when they don't want to look at the truth,
exactly.
right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So what are your concerns as an African-American man ministering in the church with these whole, with the black, I mean, I know we have a few minutes left, but summarizing the general ideas that they bring to the table that you know in your heart and soul do not work?
Those
three things. Yeah.
So critical race theory comes out of critical legal theory from the 70s, which comes out of critical theory from the 20s, which comes out of actually not Marx and Engels, but Marx and Freud materialism, which comes out of the Hegelian dialectic. So what I do is I have to trace all of that back and then to show step by step how we get to critical race theory today. And when I do that, you're going to see like, whoa, this has nothing to do with any of this. And the kind of common theme that runs through all three is this Marxist element that's in there. About, you know, it's not about forgiveness. It's not about opening our heart deeply to the will of God. It's about overthrowing governments. And we have to use fear. We have to use anger. We have to use things that actually that Christ says separates us.
And also,
that's what they're trying to
originally
use as a
Black Lives Matter, but they took it off their website when they got called on the carpet for it. You recall? I think we talked about this before in this show, where they actually were talking about we need to break up. I'm paraphrasing, but break up the family.
Yeah, and so I screenshotted that website before they did that.
Good for you.
And I included in the book what they actually said, and what it is a Trojan horse. So the Trojan horse on the outside says racism. But inside, it's their whole goal is the destruction of the nuclear family.
Yeah,
and that,
yeah.
Obviously that's a huge, huge problem. So, and the problem is, Teresa, with all of this. See, back in the 50s and 60s, we had Martin Luther King.
Right.
Right. We had someone that cut through all the polemics of politics and race and Democrat, Republican. Someone that people can rally around and say, this guy gets it. You know, and he cut through all of that. We have nobody like that today.
Yeah.
So with this leadership vacuum, we have all these organizations, individuals that don't care about racism, that are trying to let their voices be heard, that are trying to push agendas that have nothing to do with race. And so they're getting all the attention from the media.
Yeah.
So this book is going to be a counter to that, and to really show how Catholics, of all the people in the world, I truly believe with all my heart, the Catholic Church can take the lead. Because look, Teresa, we're always coming from behind, right?
Right.
We're always a reactive church. When the Supreme Court tried to change marriage, what did we do? We sent out a statement. It's too late. You know, we need to get in front of this thing. And I truly believe that we can do this with the issue of race.
Well, I think you're the person who's going to be leading us. Wouldn't you agree, Deacon Harold Burke Sivers? Thank you for your courage in so many areas. But again, it's just the opposite of what they claim. You talk about projection. They're doing just the opposite, just like in the abortion industry where they say we're all pro-choice. No, there's only one choice, and there's no choice, because if you're saying it's okay to kill a baby, and then you eliminate that child's choice, and then you eliminate the father's role in this who has no choice. So it's just the opposite of what they're saying. They're all supposed to be about. But it's more racist to keep people down. and to break up families, because this is Martin Luther King was very pro-family and talked about pro-life as well. So this is awesome. Thank you for your gift to the diaconate, and thank you for your gift to really helping us understand what's going on here. Now, will you be doing, I hope, parish missions on this eventually when the new book comes out? Because this would be a really good way to educate people on it.
Yes, I've already been giving talks on this topic all around the country. You know, virtually, for most of them,
right,
on college campuses and even the Archdiocese of Detroit. I did some trainings for them.
Great.
And in fact, my last university I spoke was Steubenville.
All right. Well, we're going to see you out there more, God willing. Deacon Harold, thanks so much. We look forward to seeing you on the rest of the cruise.
Thank you, Teresa.
Grindy's in the house. Dr. Ray Grindy joining me up live. Broke away from the buffet for about 10 minutes to be with us this morning. Stay tuned. More Catholic Connection from Oasis of the Seas coming up. We'll be right back.